Mini episode 1043 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 1043. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here today. And we've got a very interesting segment. We're going to be talking predominantly about a 25th anniversary celebration of the 1993 Philadelphia Phillies based around one of their most memorable characters and paying tribute to the late, great Darren Dalton. And we will be doing so in the course of speaking about this in the Dalton Foundation with the gentleman who is the president of the foundation, Brett Detto, who is an attorney of 28 years from the Philadelphia law firm Weir & Partners, LLP. And he goes way back with Darren and handled a lot of his legal affairs while he was still here with us. Darren, unfortunately, passing away in the summer of 2017 from brain cancer, which he fought bravely for a number of years. It took him at an untimely age, I believe 55. And again, so Brett is here to speak about the life and times of Darren Dalton and the foundation and the good work that's being done and upcoming events specifically in the month of October dedicated towards that. Brett, a pleasure to have you on the FDH Lounge for the first time today. How are you, sir?
Rick, thank you so much for having me on board. I'm doing well tonight and excited for this interview. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, we're excited to have you here. And again, I would be derelict if I didn't at least touch on this at the outset, you being somebody who practices law in the Philadelphia area and has an understanding of cases in a way that laymen really don't have. The whole thing this past week with the sentencing of Bill Cosby and the climax, at least for now, of what has been a fascinating legal saga the last couple of years, the fall of one of the titans of American pop culture. And I struggle as a lifelong Clevelander to kind of wrap my head around this, that we don't really have anybody who sort of loomed over our community in that kind of a way. I mean, I guess you could look at somebody like Bob Hope, but he moved away and stayed away, basically, and it's not a slam at him, but that's what happens a lot of times in the business. But Bill Cosby staying intertwined in the fabric of Philadelphia, it's just such a fascinating saga, and again, a sad one for the victims. And ultimately for everyone who believed in him. So your thoughts on how this all kind of played out and if you have any kind of insights on how the system's been working here.
Yeah, I mean, I do have some insight. I actually live in the same town that Bill Cosby has lived in his entire life, which is Cheltenham, Pennsylvania. And as a lawyer who practices in the Philadelphia area, it seems that most of my cases get migrated to Montgomery County, where Cheltenham is. So because of that, I've taken a particular heightened interest in following, you know, the legal saga related to, you know, probably almost a 17-year investigation and ultimately the criminal charges, the trial, and now the sentence. And, you know, it's amazing, Rick, how he went from, you know, America's dad to now a disgraced comic and how he's going to be spending the next, you know, 3 to 10 years in a state institution. But I followed the case closely. I read a lot of the materials and just had an interest in it. And I can really say that based upon everything that I read and everything that I know about the case, the jury made the right decision.
That does ultimately, again, from afar anyways, that does seem to be the case. There has just been such voluminous testimony, whether it be legal or just on the public record, as far as people who were victimized, and what a sad, sad case it turned out to be. But again, let's turn towards a much brighter subject. A very admirable gentleman who, again, you were able to meet, make the acquaintance of, and subsequently serve as legal counsel for. Let's start at the beginning with Darren Dalton. How did you get to be friends with him and begin representing him?
Yeah, so I guess after the 1993 World Series, Darren was he had been married to the first ever Hooters model, Lynn Austin, and so it was kind of a high profile marriage, and ultimately they got separated, and I had the fortunate opportunity of knowing Harry Callis, longtime Philadelphia Phillies Hall of Fame broadcaster, and I was asked by Harry and some other people I know to take a look at the potential divorce case that Darren was going to be entering into. And I took a look at it and met with Darren. We struck up a really good professional relationship right from the beginning. Had a lot of respect for him. He was one of only, you know, three Philadelphia Phillies at the time who had extended contracts. He was making $6.5 million a year over the course of 4 years. So there was a lot at stake, and with her being the first Hooters model, there was some interest there, obviously. So I decided to, you know, accept the representation. He decided, obviously, to select me as his counsel, and I was only a fourth-year lawyer at the time, but had practiced domestic relations law for those 4 years and felt comfortable doing it. Was admitted into Florida, especially to handle the case, and flew down there, spent most of 1994 and into 1995 you know, trying the case, and ultimately we got a very good decision.
In the course of all of that, again, must have been interesting to get to know him after seeing his exploits on the field and getting to follow him as a fan all of those years. One of the things that really kind of strikes me about his career, and I was joking with you off air that I still sometimes have occasion to see Darren Dalton popping up when I'm playing my LaRussa 92, because I do like to go old school, but you know, he is somebody who really between the stripes, between the lines, as it were, was kind of an anomaly, because today you look at even middle infielders and they can still kind of have some pop, but catchers who could really rake, you know, at any given point in time in the game, you can pretty much count them on one hand, and he was one of those guys during the course of his career. That's the one thing about baseball that hasn't changed, and that's why somebody like Gary Sanchez is as valuable as he is today, because he's one of the only ones who can. But Darren was a rare breed in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and again, to go back to Harry Callis, I mean, Harry Callis said, and it stuck when he said many years ago that Darren was the best team leader in any clubhouse and one of the nicest men he ever met. And attacking on the baseball field and his kind disposition, you know, won him the respect of everybody who played with him, who knew him, and then after his baseball career, who got to know him from doing appearances and signings and things of that nature. He was just, he had a genuine passion for people. He was a man that was easy to love and respect and admire, and you know, we were devastated to hear the news of his diagnosis with brain cancer and then his ultimate passing. But, you know, through this foundation, we're hoping that we can help people, that are affected by brain cancer in the ways that we are doing through the fundraiser events that we have throughout the year.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about the ones that are coming up here, but I have to say that, again, Darren Dalton was somebody that I had always admired from afar. And consistently did so. And ultimately, that's saying a mouthful as a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan, because in 1997, his Florida Marlins took the World Series memorably at the expense of my tribe, which I have said as a Cleveland sports fan, more so even than the defeats of the Browns of the late 80s. The 97 Game 7 was my low moment ever, I would say, in Cleveland sports. But again, Darren Dalton, a very deserving world champion at that time. And I do have a note from our guest booker, Steve Cervillo, that something along the lines that you had a chance encounter this past summer. I know this is not the first reunion of the 25th anniversary of the Phillies team, but a chance meeting with some of Darren's coaches from the Marlins when he played there.
Yeah, I mean, through Steve, that was a great introduction. He introduced me to several people that worked closely with Darren through the 97 team. And, you know, I actually got to talk to Jim Leland, who obviously was the manager of that team. And, you know, Jim said to me, you know, both privately and then he said it multiple times publicly, that but for Darren getting traded from the Phillies to the Marlins midseason in 97, it was his opinion that the Florida Marlins would never have won the World Series that year.
Very interesting. I might also perhaps add John Smiley blowing out his arm to the list, but that's just me. But I don't doubt that, on the Florida side that obviously Darren was a very important addition to a team that, again, for as much as, and kind of justifiably so, when you look at the way that Huizenga put it together, and it had the cast of sort of a mercenary-type tint to it with a lot of the hired guns there. But, you know, in that same breath, we are talking about many of the best players of a generation that were assembled on that team, and Darren certainly among them.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Rich Donnelly through Steve Cirillo about that, and Rich was saying that, you know, you had these high-profile, you know, big-ticket, you know, guys, and Bobby Bonilla and all the other, you know, guys that really had a little edge, a little ego, let's say, to them. And when Darren came over, you know, Rich told me one of the first times that Darren walked into the clubhouse, it's about 102 degree, you know, classic, you know, Florida day, and all the high-priced guys were in the clubhouse, you know, enjoying an iced tea and the air conditioning, and Darren had just worked his butt off, as Rich says. I'll use the clean word, and you know, when Darren saw them in there, kind of, you know, taking an extended break, Darren, you know, snapped at them and said, "Hey guys, this isn't a country club. I came here to win World Series. Get your putts out there and let's go to work." And that was kind of the spark that team needed, at least according to Donnelly and others who have told me. I'm close with Jim Eisenreich. Jim Eisenreich has told me the same story. So he was really that spark, that energy that team needed at a point in time when it could have went very south, and but for Darren, it went very north.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, painfully from my perspective, but a Razor's Edge World Series, a Razor's Edge Game 7, just a little bit here or there could have made the difference either way. So obviously, yes, his contributions loom large, because it's almost like microbes dancing on the head of a pin as far as what decided it, you know, in the end. It was that close, and the influence of somebody like him is going to loom large. And it's interesting because as I was thinking about this today, I couldn't help but compare my 97 Indians, which myself and a couple of my friends around here have always said that was almost kind of our favorite version of the 90s Indians team. So they had that kind of gritty National League edge to them. Matt Williams was on that team, Marquise Grissom. It didn't have Lofton, it didn't have Bell, it didn't have Baerga, it didn't have those guys, but it was a different and interesting kind of a team. And that the 90s really had a couple of teams that came up short in the World Series, but which we long remember. The 95 Indians, obviously, in terms of having arguably the best offense since the Big Red Machine 20 years before that. And of course, if we're going to make it a trifecta, we come back to the 93 Phillies, the one where Darren Dalton and his teammates came up short. I was rooting for them to get it done. Myself and a lot of people wanted to see the Toronto Blue Jays go down. It was not to be the case, but this is actually, and I'd alluded to you off-air earlier today, so I looked it up to see, actually the second time on this show we've gone back and talked about the 93 Phillies, a segment that we did back on November 11th, 2009, where we had Charlie Hayes and Dave Hollins on, and we were talking about that team, and it's a team that, again, obviously in the Philadelphia area, much remembered, but it's one of these special teams where even outside of Philadelphia, if you're a harder core person into baseball, you remember that 93 team. You remember, again, just how unlikely it seemed that they would dethrone the two-time National League champion Braves and go on that run that they did and come basically a Joe Carter home run short of winning the World Series. So talk about that as far as how that team is remembered in Philadelphia and how people look back at Dutch and the guys and the run that they went on that fall.
Yeah, I mean, the 1993 Phillies team obviously did not win the World Series. And for a Philadelphia sports team, you know, at that point in 1993, where there was such a drought of wins for our four major sports teams, I mean, people were thirsty. People were hungry. People wanted a win. And the fact that, you know, Joe Carter hits that walk-off in Game 6 and puts a dagger in the hearts of all the Philadelphia, you know, community that you know, rallied around this team, you know, was devastating. But at the same time, I don't think people really care. I think people look back at that team as though they won the World Series, even though they don't, just because they won the hearts of everybody that followed the team. They were a bunch of throwback, blue-collar kind of guys that just said to themselves, you know what, we're going to go out, we're going to have some fun. And, you know, what I think, you know, really put that team in the hearts of everybody in the Philadelphia and Delaware Valley area is that, they, as much fun as they had on the field, they had off the field. They were all very close friends off the field. They got along. They did some very interesting things, some things that I obviously can't share on the on the air.
Nice.
Trying to keep it G-rated.
Yeah.
But they really bonded. And I think when you look back at that team, I don't think to this day, I don't think a Philadelphia fan cares that they lost just because of what they meant to the city.
And it's interesting, yeah, because the Indians teams that came up short in the 90s, we really look at them with the same kind of fondness as well. And, teams that are that memorable can really kind of grab you in that way. There really is almost sort of the air, when you look at it from the point of view of a baseball fan, even outside of Philadelphia, who remembers that team, almost sort of in the way you're describing it there, I think perfectly, almost sort of like the modern-day Gas House Gang, really, isn't it? I mean, the colorful, larger-than-life characters that you just remember. I mean, obviously, Kruk from that team and Mitch Williams and all of those guys and, Hollins and Hayes and just everybody that was a part of making that happen. It was just really memorable.
Yeah, it really was. And like I said, I mean, blue collar. I mean, you look at, John Kruk's hair. I mean, his hair was down to his butt that year. And, and some of these guys just, some guys showed up at the clubhouse. They forgot their uniforms. They were wearing another guy's uniform. I mean, they really, they just kind of just went through the motions because they were having so much fun, and they just didn't take it as serious as, maybe a professional should. But at the same time, they were not, snubbing their nose at the game or the profession. They were just having fun and doing what they felt was comfortable and natural to them. And you're right. I mean, it had a bunch of characters on it. And you had your serious guys in Curt Schilling and Mitch Williams, but then you had your jokesters on the team, like in Kruk and who else? Like Ben Rivera and some of the other guys. Danny Jackson was a comedian. So you had a very good balance of people. You had the serious guys, you had the jokesters, and it just meshed all well together.
That's a big part of team chemistry right there. You need to have all of these things coming together and making it happen. And by the way, as I'm looking at it here, I realize I misspoke that Charlie Hayes was not on the 93 Phillies, was gone by 91, so my bad on that. But as far as the cast of characters, yeah, just a really amazing bunch that they had. And it's obviously got to be great for you to be able to see them reunited when they are able to get together. And of course, the Darren Dalton Foundation, which again can be found on the web at darrendaltonfoundation.org. Of course, you guys have got always any number of events going on, but I know a lot of times it will build up to, we're coming up on Columbus Day weekend here, and you've got on Monday, October 8th, this golf outing that is going to be really tremendous, and of course, a guest bartender event the day before in the greater Philadelphia area. So talk first about that one here and how that's going to, kind of kickstart the proceedings.
Yeah, so let me just give you the quick overview. So when Darren was diagnosed with the glioblastoma, which is, the most aggressive form of brain cancer, in 2013, he asked me to form the Darren Dalton Foundation with a new mission, and our mission helps pay medical bills and personal expenses of people who can't afford them because of the effects of brain cancers and tumors and things of that nature. So we had our first golf tournament in September of 2013, and he asked me to run it. I really had never run a golf tournament before, but I put it together. The Phillies got behind it, and we raised over $50,000 that year. And I said, this is something that can work. So through the good friends that Darren had on the 93 team, including John Kruk, who's currently an ambassador to our foundation, his very, very dear friend Tommy Green, Danny Jackson, We've been able to, and Mickey Morandini, let me not forget Mickey, we've been able to, allow the foundation to continue in Darren's absence. So it's remarkable. I mean, Darren meant so much to, you know, so many players, not only on the 1993 team, but the 1980 team. And he got to know, you know, after his career, a lot of the players on the World Series team in 1987 and 88, and they all come out to support us. So, as you said, Rick, yeah, we have two big fundraisers coming up, October 8th and 9th. The first is that celebrity bartending event, which, this year Reese Hoskins is going to be, one of our headliners that day. Sunday, October 7th, and that's at the Great American Pub, which is in Phoenixville, right outside of Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And Reese Hoskins and Andrew Knapp, and Andrew being a catcher, knew a lot about Darren, had a lot of respect for Darren. So Andrew Knapp reached out to me and asked if he can become involved and get some of the current players involved. So Reese Hoskins, Andrew Knapp, and then several of Darren's teammates, Tommy, Danny, Mickey, Jim Eisenreich, Ricky Jordan, and a bunch of the other guys are coming to that event on Sunday, October 7th to, give a half hour of their time to bartend and mingle with the people and raise, money for our foundation. And then the next day, all these same cast of characters will go to our sixth annual golf tournament, and that's at Manufacturers Country Club right outside of Philadelphia. And the Phillies are our title sponsor along with Yingling. And we do an amazing event. We have over 144 golfers, and we get some of the Phillies front office and Bill Giles, David Montgomery to come out. Charlie Manuel comes out every year. And it's all about just not only paying respects to Darren, but about doing the right thing and helping our foundation do what we do and raising the money to help people.
This is one of the really amazing things about sports and about different franchises out there, almost sort of regardless of sport, is that brotherhood among the people who've worn the same uniform. And what you're talking about as far as the different eras of Philly baseball, and that, Darren meant a lot to the players who came after him on the 08 champions, the 09 pennant winners, and obviously the guys who won the World Series in 1980 meant a lot to him and to his teammates, and even to the ones who have yet to win anything yet in the modern era. It is really cool to see that, as I've seen with the Cleveland franchises over a period of time, just that respect there is among guys who've worn the same uniform.
Yeah, and let me speak to that because I can't tell you how other clubs do it, but I personally witnessed how the Phillies do it, and I can genuinely say this, that the Phillies alumni is a family, and they have an alumni relations coordinator by the name of Debbie Nacido. She works with the Phillies, and she's an amazing person. She has a database of all the contact information of everybody who's ever played for the Phillies. And Alumni Weekend, which is a big weekend that the Phillies hold every August in Philadelphia, you get all of these players back to the 40s, the 50s, coming to Philadelphia to not only celebrate those that are being inducted into what is known as the Phillies Wall of Fame, but just to be together with one another and reminisce and tell stories and to meet one another, it's really remarkable. And I've been at Alumni Weekend for the past 5 years. I've been the guest of the Phillies. And I've never seen an organization that cares more about their alumni, that puts these events together. They fly in everybody at their expense. They put them up at the best hotel. And, they wine and dine them. But at the same time, they expect and appreciate that the players will be available for interviews, photographs, and just mingling with the general public. It's really remarkable, and I've never seen another organization. I can't speak to how everybody does it, but I've never seen an organization do it better than the Phillies do it.
That is really cool to hear about because, I'm one of those people where I find that to be very appealing, the sort of cross-generational bonding that you have and the history of a franchise and, again, just making the history something that people continue to talk about and have as a part of their lives. That's a great thing for that organization to do, and what a great outing. There is the Darren Dalton Foundation golf outing, which, again, the keystone of the weekend, but preceded by, of course, the celebrity bartender event. All of this information can be found at DarrenDaltonFoundation.org. And, again, it has been our pleasure hearing this about this from you, Brett Datto. And, again, if there's anything we didn't hit sufficiently that you wanted to, please take it away.
No, I really appreciate the time. I'm excited for our upcoming events. Anybody who has questions or wants to know anything about the events, again, yes, check out the website. You can go on our Facebook page. You can check us out on Instagram. My phone number is on the website, and anybody can call me. And if somebody has a situation where someone in their family or someone that they know is affected by brain cancer or a brain tumor and they're just unable to meet their expenses, then I encourage them to reach out to me or to go on our website, fill out an application, and we'll certainly respond in some fashion with respect to either acknowledging the application, providing the award, or talking to the person about how we can best help them.
Well, what an amazingly worthy cause, and great to have it associated with the name of somebody like Darren Dalton, who, again, cared a lot about other people and fought to make a difference while he was here. And through your efforts and the efforts of others, Brett, he is continuing to do so and continuing to live on in such a worthwhile kind of a way. Thank you for being here to talk about this, and we look forward to hopefully keeping up with you subsequently here on other events with the Darren Dalton Foundation. Appreciate you making time for us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful night.
I appreciate it. Thank you, too, Brett. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 1043.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.